Welcome to yet another semester of Asicha Seminars. I am Jonah Steinmetz. I'm teaching the Halacha series of this semester, which I have for the past year, which I guess was, what, four or five semesters? I'm losing track right now, but I think five, if you count the summer, this past summer as a semester. So five semesters, four full semesters. We've been learning Halacha together. The last year, those of you who are returning, which I see some of you, again, if you're willing to put on your screen, that is greatly appreciated, both by you as well as by the speaker. But so some names and some faces I definitely recognize as returning, and also some names I don't recognize because they are new. So welcome to our newest members. Those of you who are with us over the past year, we spent a full year, I guess about 47 and 46, something like that, shiurim, learning about Hilchos Shabbos. And there's still more to do, and maybe we'll come back to Hilchos Shabbos. But it felt like a good time to take a break for a few moments, maybe a semester, maybe two semesters, maybe more, and switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about Hilchos Kashrus. It's still halacha, and it's still hopefully learning halacha in such a way that we feel like we're not just asking shailas and getting answers. The spoon is, the knife is, the meat is, the pizza is, you know, kosher, treif, you name it. No, but actually to understand a little bit where the dinim come from, what the source is, how to understand the source in a more fundamental way that yields an actual understanding, to actually really get a grasp of what the halacha is all about. And when we have that understanding, A, it gives us meaning in our shmiras halacha, our shmiras hamitzvos. B, it gives us sipuk, it helps us feel fulfilled in our learning, that we're still growing, that we're still striving, challenging ourselves, stimulating our brains and our hearts to grow even post-seminary. And also, ultimately, honestly, it makes us better at keeping halacha. Hopefully a lot of you have learned this. I know from emails from a lot of you over the last year or so, that you know, it helps you think a little bit more. If you know what the halacha is about, and you know where the halacha comes from, and you know who argues about the halacha, and you know why they argue, your questions take on a different nature. You start to ask questions in a different way. You start to think about the halacha more and not just do it by rote. But you start to wonder, oh, is this really mutter or is that really usser? And you start to question all of those details that you once thought were obvious. That's challenging. It makes life more interesting, and it makes things sometimes throws us curveballs. But it also makes life more geschmack. It makes it more interesting and more exciting in a positive way. And it helps, again, like I said, it helps us keep our halacha at the highest level possible. And we're trying to do all of those things here at Asicha Seminar. So hopefully you're all registered if you're here tonight. Probably most of you are. If you're not registered, so I'll put a link in the group. You can register at our website. Our website is asichaseminars.com. And the link for registration is asichaseminars.com/register. You can register there. It's free of charge. Although donation is optional and certainly appreciated, it helps us run. We are totally donation and sponsor based. The donations are tax deductible. So anything you give, you'll get a tax receipt automatically, and that will be written off. So certainly feel free to register so that you can come regularly, get our reminders, get updates about events, join our WhatsApp group. You can find that on the website as well, and you'll get to know about the events that are upcoming, and hopefully we'll get more some in-person events as well. B'siat d'shmaya, as hopefully we keep crawling out of this trying time period of the pandemic, as it hopefully is ebbing away. Speaking about donations, the shiur tonight is Baruch Hashem sponsored, and we'll get to that in a moment. But shiurim are available for sponsorship. That is one of the ways that we bring in donations and help the program run. So if you're willing any week to sponsor the next week's shiur, you can send us an email, info@asichaseminars.com. Someone will reply to deal with you about that, or you can visit the website. Some of the details are really there already. At asichaseminars.com/donate, that tab on the website will give you some of the information in terms of how to arrange those sponsorships. And there are more sponsorship opportunities. We can always talk, and we're always open to brainstorming. Some of you have taken me up on this, most of you have not, but we are always open to brainstorming. So always feel free to reach out with an email. You can email the general email info, or you can email me, steinmetz@asichaseminars.com. If you have ideas, thoughts, comments, concerns, feedback, questions, halacha questions, technical questions, we're happy to help. That's what we're here for. We're just trying to make it a grander learning experience. We're trying to make it more exciting for everyone, trying to reach more people in a deeper way. So always feel free to let us know, because that's the only way we'll know how to make it better for you. Lastly, a lot of you know about our new Asicha Vadim program, which Baruch Hashem, thank you, first of all, to Liora for helping out a lot on that. In terms of running point on the arranging between the collaborators and the program. So we did launch the Asicha Vadim program, which we're really, really excited about. It's our first consistent in-person programming, and the groups that have already formed in Woodmere, In Teaneck, one is still in the midst of forming. If you're interested in Teaneck or Bergenfield, you can actually reach out directly to Liora Zamek, or you can reach out to me as well. There's one in Teaneck Bergenfield, like I said. There's one in Passaic. There is one in Chicago. We're really excited about all the different places in Queens. Very nice groups of women getting together to learn in person with a mechaneches, with a powerhouse mechaneches in all the cases that I've mentioned above, who's going to learn every other week in person, small groups, intimate setting, make a relationship with her, and really get to know her. It's usually in a home or in a small shul, and more of a setting of becoming friends with each other and also having a real role model from the person who's leading the group. And you'll learn a different type of sefer, Avodas Hashem, Machshava, Hashkafa, Musar, something that's off of the tracks of what we do with our regular semester shiurim. If you're part of a VAD, we want to hear how it goes, so you should definitely let me know how it goes. And if you're not part of the VAD and you want to get part of a VAD, so reach out. We'd love to get you into one. There are sponsorship opportunities available for that as well. If you're not sponsoring and you just want to join, that's okay. We'll have as many people sign up as possible. The Kaddish Baruch will provide the funding as long as we're doing the right thing. So reach out, sign up, start a new VOD if you're interested. Let us know that you want to do that. We're happy to help. And B'siyat D'Shmaya, we hope together we can lead to a lot more Harbatz to the Torah. Okay, thankfully, Jessica Savitt is not here because she'd be yelling at me for my long introduction. But instead, we will now jump into our shiur. How many people here? Give me a thumbs up if, wait, don't give me a thumbs up prematurely, if you're excited to see these slides again. All right, okay, I'll take that. And you see the slides, that means, right? Because that's what I really wanted to know. Okay, awesome. So our shiur tonight, our first corny title of the semester, so the inaugural corny title, is What's Cooking? Defining Bishul Basar B'Chalav. The shiur, as I said, is sponsored. It's sponsored by my parents, Li'ili Nishmas, my Bubby, Gittel Bas Zev Yitzhak and Fego, whose yard site, her eighth yard site, was quite recently, not exactly on the date, but this is as close as we can get it. We thank them for their sponsorship, and we're hopeful that our Divrei Torah tonight lead to an Iloi Neshama for my Babi Gittel Bas Zev Yitzhak and Fega. So the shiur tonight is, Emir Hashem, going to be very much introductory. It's very much fundamental. It's foundational, but it's foundational in the sense of introductory. What I mean by that is as follows. So many of our shiurim over the course of this semester are going to be very halachal lemaisa, very practical, very hands-on, things that are going to come up in your home, things that are going to come up in your office, things that are going to come up when you're traveling, when you're at a simcha, real halachal lemaisa shailas that you're going to have to deal with in terms of determining basar b'chalav, kashrus, is something edible, not edible, is a knife treif. Those are things we're really going to get down to the nitty-gritty and have to understand the halachal lemaisa. Tonight's no different, except that the halachal lemaisa starts after we get the background. That's so much of what we do here. We want to build up from the basics, from the bottom. We're going to give us the building blocks tonight. The halachos of basar b'chalav, mixing meat and dairy, are so complex. It seems like a simple thing. Everyone knows Uncle Maishi told us it's very simple. We never, ever, ever eat meat and milk together. It's very simple. It's very easy, but it's not so easy because it's not clear what eating is. It's not clear what meat is. It's not clear what milk is. It's not clear what together is. All the different terms, never, ever, ever, ever. That part's clear that Uncle Maishi says. That's pretty clear. You can never, ever, ever do it. But every other word in the song is actually subject to machlokas and the Gemara and the Rishonim, the Achronim. We have to figure out how all these terms are defined. And the first term we want to define tonight, even though it's going to seem to you counterintuitive, but the first term we want to define tonight is not achila, is not eating, it's actually bishul. Okay, bishul meaning technically we would call it cooking, correct? We want to define what cooking is. So let's start with a very, very simple sentence, a very, very basic statement. Basar b'chalav is aser. If I could see you on the screen right now, because I have you on the bottom over here, nod your head if you agree with that statement, nod your head very violently left and right if you disagree. Up and down if you agree. Yeah, okay. The people who I see happen not to be nodding, but I'm assuming other people are nodding. So basar b'chalav is aser. Yeah, that was easy, right? Uncle Maishi, mefurash, good. Basar b'chalav is aser. Simple. What's the source? Does the Torah tell us basar b'chalav is aser? Yeah, the Torah does tell us. It says it in an interesting way, though. The Torah says, lo sivashel gedi b'chalev imo. That's what the Torah says in Parshas Mishpatim. You have the source over here right in the middle of the page. You may not, what does sivashel mean? Bishul, right? You may not cook gedi, a kid, b'chalev imo, in the milk of its mother. Now, all of those words, gedi b'chalev imo, the Gemara points out, none of them are meant very literally. It doesn't have to specifically be a kid. It doesn't have to specifically be the milk of the mother, right? It can be any sort of meat in any sort of milk, dairy, as long as it's deemed to be halachically considered meat and milk. But it's not really limited to gedi b'chalev imo. Why did it talk about that particular case? maybe that was the most normal case. You had them next to each other, near each other. They ended up on the same farm, so they would be in each other's milk, but it doesn't really matter for the halacha l'maisa. So lo sivash al gdi b'chalev imo. Is that helpful? So certainly helpful. It tells me you can't cook meat and milk together. But a little bit, it's not helpful, right? Because I just said a really broad statement. Basar b'chalev is asr. Basar b'chalev is asr. Basar b'chalev is asr means it's asr to what? To cook? Yeah, to cook. But it's also asr to eat. And maybe there's other things that are asr as well, no? Maybe it's asr to gain any sort of benefit from. Are you allowed to smell it? Are you allowed to look at it? Are you allowed to gain money from it? Like, what is included in this prohibition? We know between us that it's not only cooking. So why is the Torah only telling us here cooking? So the truth is, don't worry. There are two other psukim, okay? There are two other psukim in the Torah which tell us about basar b'chalev being asr. Get ready. Three times in the Torah says, lo sivash al gdi b'chalev imo, mishpatim. Lo sivash al gdi b'chalev imo. Not so many prakim later in Shmos. Lo sivash al gdi b'chalev imo in Sefer Dvarim. What? Three times the Torah says, don't cook meat in milk. Don't cook meat and milk together. So basar b'chalev is asr. Yeah, three times the Torah tells us that, but each time it tells us the exact same thing. Pretty repetitive, pretty strange, no? The exact same thing three times. Not only that, but we know the halacha. We know that the halacha is that you also can't eat basar b'chalev. But the Torah never says that. It only says you can't cook basar b'chalev. So hold on to that thought. That's really the main question we want to come back to tonight, which is why the Torah is so focused on cooking. Why is it that the Torah is focused on bishul basar b'chalev? But something fascinating comes out of the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin learns that if you look at these three psukim, everything is there. You have to know this from learning halacha, by the way. When we learn halacha, so when we start with the psukim, so learning psukim is very important and very beautiful and very meaningful, and halavai, we would know many, many more psukim in the whole Tanakh. But when we learn the Torah, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, without the lens of the Torah Shel Peh, without the lens, the viewpoint of Chazal in the Gemara, of the Shulchan Aruch, how it comes out halacha l'maisa, when we learn without that viewpoint, we're missing so much. Over here, if I learned the Torah straight through, backwards and forwards, I would find the Torah telling me three different times not to cook meat and milk together, and I would never know that you can't eat or get benefit from the meat and milk. And yet, the Gemara in Chulin tells us, Chazal tell us, that one pasuk comes to tell you don't cook. The other two pasukim come to tell you something completely different. The Torah wasn't repeating itself. The Torah wasn't going to say the same exact thing three times. Well, that's crazy. It's a broken record. Why would the Torah do that? No. The Torah said it three times in order to teach us that there are three different isurim. There's the isur of cooking basar b'chalev. There's the isur of eating basar b'chalev. And there's the isur of gaining benefit from, deriving benefit from basar b'chalev, from a mixture of meat and milk. So this statement, basar b'chalev is asr, really does work out. It's the convergence, it's the culmination, it's the summation, it's the combination of all three of these sources. All three of these sources, which seem to say the same thing at face value, don't cook, don't cook, don't cook, really what they amount to is basar b'chalev is asr, to eat, to cook, and to benefit from. That's what we learn in the Gemara about these three psukim that show up in the Torah. Now, in the Shulchan Aruch does quote an interesting thing about this, about these psukim, and this comes to the core of our shiur tonight, which is defining bishul. The Shulchan Aruch here in Yoredeya, all of the halachas we're going to talk about over the course of these 10 weeks are from Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya. Yoredeya is the segment of Shulchan Aruch, which deals with, many, many other things also, but it's the parts that we'll deal with, deals with Hilchos Kashrus. So the Shulchan Aruch here of Yosef Kairo, the Mechaber, tells us as follows. We'll read the whole sif together. Kasev b'Torah. It says in the Torah, it says in the Psukim, Lo sivash al gdi v'chalev imo. It says it three times. Gimel pe'amim. Don't cook meat and milk together. Echad l'isr bishol, v'echad l'isr achila, v'echad l'isr hana. Each one is teaching us a different thing. This is what we just said a second ago. Each one is teaching us a different thing. Don't eat basar b'chalev. Don't cook basar b'chalev. And don't derive benefit from basar b'chalev. Good. Shkayach. Thank you very much, Shulchan Aruch. Says the Shulchan Aruch as follows. But why in the world, if we're talking about achilas basar b'chalev, you're not allowed to eat basar b'chalev. So why didn't the Torah say, lo sochal gidi b'chalev imo, lo sochal basar b'chalev? Why does the Torah say, lo sivashel, and you're supposed to know from that, oh, bishel, that means eating. Why did the Torah say eating in the form of cooking? Why did it use the word cooking to describe eating? So the Shulchan Aruch says it's actually to teach us a rule. the rule that the Torah is trying to teach us by using such a weird language is that v'hotzi achila b'lashon bishul, the reason why the Torah decided to say don't eat basar b'chalav in this cryptic way, this enigmatic way, by saying lo sevashel, why did it use a lashon of cooking, of bishul? Lomar, to tell us she'eino asur min haTorah ela derech bishul. The only time that it's asur min haTorah to consume, to cook, to make basar b'chalav, to deal with basar b'chalav, the only time that there's a d'oraisa, biblical prohibition of basar b'chalav on hand that you're dealing with, is only when you cook it derech bishul, in the way of bishul. Know, what in the world does that mean? How do you cook something without it being in derech bishul, in the way of bishul? Cooking, it means bishul. So how do you cook something in a way that's not bishul, that's not cooking? We'll get to that in a moment. But the Shulchan Aruch tells us that if you cook it in a way that's, let's say, abnormal, that's not the standard way of cooking, it's something unique, it's a different form of crafting basar b'chalav, that's not going to be an iser d'oraisa. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you're not off the hook. If you make basar b'chalav in a way that's unique, that's not really derech bishul, that's not the normal way of cooking, we'll have to define it still, like I said, but it's not the normal way of cooking, you make it in that way, it's not asr d'oraisa, but it is asr midarabanan, you can't eat it, right? You can't cook it that way necessarily, you definitely can't eat it. Can you derive benefit from it? So this is something we'll have to talk about in the future as well, but the answer is that yes, you may not derive benefit from basar b'chalav, from a mixture of meat and milk, if it's a d'oraisa biblical mixture. If it's only a derabanan rabbinic mixture of meat and milk, like in a case where you cooked it in an abnormal way, which we haven't described yet, but if you were to cook it in an abnormal way, it would only be asr midarabanan, then you're allowed to derive benefit from it. So let's just make up a case quickly, but we'll come back to a similar case. If you accidentally, let's say accidentally, you cooked basar b'chalav together, ay, gevalt, geshrigan, terrible, you messed up your kitchen, you'll have to deal with the kalim, the dishes another time, but right now you have a food in front of you that's a mixture of meat and milk. But you did in a strange way. It wasn't derech bishul, whatever that means. It was an abnormal sort of cooking. It didn't take place in a way that's asar daraisa. So what can you do with that right now? So normally you can't sell basar b'chalav. That's deriving benefit. But here you would be allowed to get rid of it in that way. You would allow to derive benefit from it because it was only asar midarabanan in the first place. So if the basar b'chalav was asar daraisa, you can't derive benefit. But if it was only asar midarabanan, then you're allowed to derive benefit. Hold on to that. We will, Amir Tzashem, return to those types of things. But basically, we're defining bishul like the topic of our shir is supposed to be. So we know that you can't cook basar b'chalav. We know the Torah said, don't eat basar b'chalav. And it said it by saying, lo sevashel, don't cook basar b'chalav. Put two and two together. And the Shulchan Aruch says, oh, the Torah said, don't eat basar b'chalav by saying, don't cook, because the two are connected. Because it's only asr to eat basar b'chalav on a d'oraisa level if it was cooked in a normal way. So now let's talk about it. What does that mean, cooking in a normal way? We keep beating around the bush, right? What does it mean, cooking in a normal way? What's a normal cooking? What's an abnormal cooking? So here I have four pictures, okay? They're, I think, unless you've learned these halachos before, which some of you might have, unless you've learned them, I guess, recently enough that you remember exactly what we're talking about over here, they're pretty cryptic. I don't think you get much out of these pictures in terms of where we're going with this, but we're going to label them as we go, and hopefully you'll start to get a clue of what we're trying to do over here in a second. But derech bishul, the way of cooking is obviously, I don't know, I take, I'm always bad at giving cooking examples, unfortunately, but I take a pot of water and I throw in a chicken and I heat up the, or I get a dead chicken, you know, whatever, you know the drill. So I take a chicken, I throw it into the pot, I heat up the water with a fire, water cooks the chicken, shalom Yisrael, I have supper. That doesn't sound like it's a delicious supper. You have to throw in some, I don't know, cumin? What do we... paprika, you throw in thing, ketchup. So you'll make a nice chicken and you have supper. That's cooking chicken, right? You have water, fire, and that's perfect. That's cooking. That's bishul for sure. Make a chicken soup the same way. That's called bishul, right? On Shabbos, we'd kill you for breaking Shabbos. Our first semester of Asichah seminars was bishul b'Shabbos. So yeah, that would be bishul on Shabbos. That would be bishul in Kol Torah Kula. Why not? That would be a regular case. What's derech bishul? That's derech bishul. That's the normal way of cooking. So what's not derech bishul? So the shach is a major, major commentary on the side of the page in Yoredeya and Shulchan Aruch. The shach, in his first comment on this whole siman, gives two examples of methods which are not considered derech bishul. They're considered bishul on a derabanan level, but on a d'oraisa level, a biblical level, they're not considered cooking basar b'chalav because they're not derech bishul. They're strange. They're different. You're unique. They're abnormal in the sense they're not the normal way of cooking. The first example he gives is salting. That's, you see on the left side, salting meat. Now, if you've never learned Hilchos Shabbos or Hilchos Kashrus before, you don't even understand where this is coming from. Salting meat, what does that have to do with cooking? Biologically, this is true, but it's not so important. I guess not biologically, chemically, this is true. But it's not so important, the chemics right now. But halachically, it's certainly true that when you salt a meat, it heats it up in such a way that in terms of halacha, that's considered significant enough that you're actually cooking the meat. Now, that has major, major practical ramifications when it comes to salting meat that has blood in it. When the blood transfers from there to the other piece of meat, does that make the other piece of meat now treif because it has blood in it? It has major, major nafkaminas. Or if you have two pieces of meat, one treif and one kosher, and you salt them together, is it called like cooking them together? On Shabbos, when you salt something, is that called cooking? Major practical ramifications. But halacha does, in some way, in some shape, in some form, halacha does consider salting to be a form of cooking. Says the Shach, yeah, it's a form of cooking. It's a type of bishul. To salt a meat very heavily, to put a lot of salt in there and leave it there for a certain amount of time, that's called cooking. But is it derech bishul? Would you ever make supper this way? Would you make the chicken we were talking about before by just pouring a ton of salt in it? So some of us might enjoy that, but most of us would not be pleased with a raw piece of chicken that was salted heavily for a few hours and then brought to the table. It's a type of bishul in halacha, but it's not derech bishul. It's not the normal way of bishul. Says the Shach, that'll be asur midarabanan. You're not allowed to salt cheese with meat together in such a way that it makes halachic malicha that you're salting it. You're not allowed to do that midarabanan. But midaraisa, is that derech bishul? No way. That's not derech bishul midaraisa. Why? It's abnormal. It's not just a strange way of cooking. Regular cooking is not the salting meat. And that's one example the Shach gives. The Shach gives a second example. That's the one on the right. And that's called kvisha. Kaf, Bez, Yud, Shin, Hey. Kvisha, or Kavish, you might have heard of. There's a term in Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Kashrus, Kavish Kimevushal, that if you soak something, by soaking we mean pickling, as you see in the picture over there, you soak something in vinegar for long enough, maybe for 24 hours, maybe shorter, depending on how spicy or how strong the substance you're soaking it in is, but you soak a vegetable or a meat in a brine, in a vinegar, for long enough, that'll be called halachic cooking. That'll be true on Shabbos, and that'll be true in terms of kashrus as well. So if you want to soak a piece of cheese and a piece of meat together in a jar with vinegar, doesn't sound scrumptious either, but if you would do such a thing, is that cooking, says the Shach? It's cooking technically, halachically, that's a form of cooking, but is that derech bishul? Is that the full form of cooking, the normal form of cooking? Is that the full, normal, derech bishul? No, that's not the normal derech bishul. If it's not the normal derech bishul, then you're not going to have the iser del raisa of basar b'chalav. You'll have an iser d'rabanan. You're not going to eat that. You can't have that for dinner. You're not allowed to have soaked meat and milk together for to eat. That's going to be asur midarabanan. But midaraisa, that's not derech bishul. On a biblical level, that's not derech bishul. That's not the normal way of cooking. And so it doesn't result in an iser del raisa. Now let's throw a question out to the crowd, and we'll do that by way of a poll. So if you look at your screen now, hopefully you see. Give me a thumbs up right now if you see, actually. Okay, great. So a poll just came out. Oh, people are already answering. So you want to answer these questions. They're totally anonymous. I don't know who answers what. I do know how many people answer. So we'd like to see full participation or close to full participation. You don't have to get this one right. We're throwing it out there as a survey to see where people are starting from, although the results are pretty one-sided so far. So the question reads, should roasting meat and cheese together be an iser d'araisa of bishul basar b'chalav? Choose just one answer. Basically, when you take meat and cheese and you roast them, so I don't know, you hold them over a flame, right? You don't have a pot with water like we were describing until now with that delicious chicken recipe I told you before. You don't have that. You have a case where you have a cheese and a burger and you hold it over a grill pan. You hold it over a fire and you let the flame roast the cheese and the meat together. Do you think that's an iser del raisa of bishul basar b'chalav? Are you cooking the meat and the milk together? Even though obviously in English, we call them two different things, roasting and cooking. But in halacha, are they both considered bishul? So we have 80% participation, which is not bad. It's not bad at all. But can we get a few more people who didn't answer yet? Okay, we're at 81% now. A few more people who didn't answer yet to take a stab. Again, it's not a hard question or an easy question. We don't have the tools to answer the question yet. What about corned beef? Isn't it prepared initially by soaking in a brine? So yeah, that would be a good, I didn't happen not to know that about corned beef, but yeah, that would be an example of cooking something through kvisha. Question is what it's soaked in and for how long, but potentially, you know, I guess you wouldn't be allowed to do it on Shabbos, you know, for example. And if there were cheese in there, that could make a nisir of basar b'chalav. The shach will tell us only midrabbanan. So again, last chance, we'll give it 5 seconds. If you want to answer the poll should be on your screen. It's easy to select one answer. Should roasting meat and cheese together be considered an isser d'araisa of bishul basar b'chalav? 3, 2. Buzzer beater, anyone? 1. Okay. We got a pretty good participation here. Pretty heavily, most people chose, and I will share the results with you here. Again, it's anonymous, but you can see the numbers. Most of us decided that, yeah, roasting is certainly cooking. I guess 59 people decided that, yes, you're cooking if you roast the cheese and milk together. Only 18% said, no, that's not considered cooking. Now, I'm going to start from where you guys are holding, as if I didn't prepare a shiur about this, okay? So I'm going to pretend I'm in your shoes. Right now, if I was in your shoes, I would be with the majority, 100%. I would be with the majority, and I might still be with them afterwards. I'm not saying I won't be, but I would start with the majority, and I would say, of course, that's cooking. Okay, we have different technical terms in English and in Hebrew for cooking and roasting, or bishul and sli, right? We have different words for the two things, but you're essentially doing the same thing. You're creating a cheeseburger, was the case I said before, right? Cheese and a burger together, and you're making something through making it edible by holding over a fire. One has water, one doesn't have water, but come on, they're both cooking. Someone just asked privately, it's important to answer this, is there a difference between d'araisa and d'rabbanan? So of course there's a difference in terms of how severe the affront is, right? If you violate an isser d'araisa, your Gehenna is going to be, you know, as hot as it is in this apartment right now because the air conditioner is off. If it's isser d'rabbanan that you violated, it'll be as hot as it is in this apartment when the air conditioner is on. It's not such a strong air conditioner, right? It'll be different levels of punishment for your isser d'araisa d'rabbanan. Fine. But also, like we said in the very beginning, in basar b'chalav, it's very important. If you have an isser d'araisa of basar b'chalav in front of you, a real biblical prohibition, you're not even allowed to derive any benefit from it. If it's only an isser d'rabbanan, you're not allowed to do it, you're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to derive benefit from it. So it does grab major nafkaminas, have major differences. So most of us decided roasting should be considered bishul by basar b'chalav. And that's what you see on the left side, roasting. Cheeseburger, I think, is basically done that way, except when they use a microwave, we'll talk about that later. But you know, you hold it over a fire. You don't actually put it into a pot with a cheese and a burger. The majority of us decided that's considered derech bishul. That's the normal way of cooking. I'm going to throw in another one over here, frying. Frying is another, again, it has a different technical term, but I assume if I pose the question, should frying be considered bishul or not? I assume the majority of us, or at least 59 of us, would have decided, hey, frying, of course, that's considered, bishul. Just to pause for a second, someone asked, what is meant by deriving benefit? Excellent, excellent question. I gave one example earlier of selling it and getting a monetary benefit from the product of basar b'chalav. But you're right, we have to spend time discussing what's considered benefit. It'll be a whole nother shiur. We will, at the end of this shiur, discuss some examples of what may or may not be considered benefit, but it's everything is its own shiur. So if you're here right now and you're asking that question, you might want to stick around for the next 9 weeks as well. Feeding your dog could very well be a good example of hana as well, correct? So frying, I would say, most, right, the majority of you would probably say the same thing as roasting, right? So it's very interesting. This actually becomes a major machlokas rishonim and then poskim. Because if you look at the Gemara is complicated, so we're going to streamline the Gemara a little bit. But if you look in the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Dalid, the Gemara seems to assume that frying something, tigun, frying food, which means, you know, taking a little bit of oil and frying the meat and the cheese in there together, that would not be considered derech bishul. That's how Rashi learns the Gemara. The Tosos don't learn the Gemara that way, but it comes out to a machlokas as follows. When we say derech bishul, and this is going to answer the question that was in the chat just now in terms of describing what the difference is between cooking and frying and roasting, we keep throwing around terms, what the actual difference is as follows. A lot of the poskim say that when you cook something, cooking halachically is defined as everything we described in our first case. You have the food, meat and milk, let's say, a fire and water. Okay? You need the fire and the water. Bishul means cooking something in water that's being cooked by a fire. That's bishul. I'll give you an example, a really important halacha that none of us ever deal with halacha maisa, unfortunately, but if you learn the Gemara, as you will, come across them, of course, but none of us deal them halacha l'maisa, sadly, right now. You have to bring a carbon pesach, right? When you have a base of mikdash, when we're able to bring carbon pesach, I should say, you have to bring a carbon pesach on pesach, on erev pesach. So how do you make the carbon pesach? So the Torah says you can't you can't cook it. It should not be bashal mavushal. It should not be cooked. Kiyam tzli esh. It should only be roasted. So the Torah says, oh, there's a distinction. There's a contrast. There's two different things over here. There's bashal mavushal. The Karban Pesach may not be cooked. It's kiyam tzli esh. It must be roasted. What does roasted mean? So when you learn the halachas, you'll see that a Karban Pesach is stabbed through the from the mouth to the bottom with a skewer, and you put it through the whole body of the Karban Pesach, and you hold it over a hot oven, which has fire coming out, and you roast it, you know, you twist it, sort of barbecue it that way. If you would take that same Karban Pesach and dump it in a big pot of water and put that pot of water over a fire and cook a delicious dinner, that would be a pasul karban. Why? Because the Torah says you must roast it. It needs to be tzli esh. It needs to be roasted by a fire. You may not cook it. It can't be cooked. What does cooked mean? Says the halacha, cooking means in water over a fire. If you're cooking anything without water, without a fire, you won't have bishul. So let's come back to our example. Salting, that's easy, right? That's not derech bishul. There's no water. There's no fire. Soaking in, let's say, like vinegar or something like that, there's no fire. So it might be halachically a type of cooking, but it's definitely not derech bishul. It's definitely not the regular, normal, straight way of bishul of cooking. Roasting, so like the majority of us said, come on, you're accomplishing the same thing. You're cooking something. You're doing it without water. Who cares? The answer is the halacha cares. The halacha says, according to some of the poskim, the halacha says that only if you have water and fire together, it can be potentially like a soup broth or anything like that. In fact, by Karban Pesach, the Gemara has drushos to teach us this, that even if it's cooked in fruit juice, things like that, maybe it's also bashal mavushal. It's also considered cooked. So yeah, liquids. It has to be cooked in a liquid over a fire, then it's considered a cooking. Roasting with just a fire but no water is not considered cooking. It's asur midarabanan. Don't make cheeseburgers. Don't turn your video off right now and go make cheeseburgers. It's definitely asur midarabanan. Don't get me wrong, but it's not asur daraisa. It's not derech bishul. That's not derech bishul. There's no water. There's no liquid. How could you call it derech bishul? Frying. It's a little bit closer, right? Frying. You hear. There's a little bit of a liquid. Yeah, exactly. There's a liquid in frying, so you could hear. And some of the posts can point that out. That even if you think roasting is not derech bishul, frying, for sure, how could frying not be derech bishul? But some of the posts can say, no, it has to be a much greater amount of liquid. So then you have to talk about deep frying versus, I don't think they call it shallow frying, but you know, deep frying versus not deep frying, which is, I guess, also an afkamina of like how much closer to death you're inching while you're eating it, but that's a discussion for another time. But frying food in a lot of oil or less oil, okay, you could discuss all of these different things, but derech bishul, what it really means essentially, is that derech bishul is with water. And say the poskim, maybe roasting and roasting and frying don't fit that definition. Now, this is a machlokas. This is a major machlokas. This is not clear at all in the poskim. And it comes down to it, we're very careful about this, right? We're not going to mess around with a potential iser daraisa. But it does actually, again, this isn't going to come up so often, but we're going to try to fit in halach lemais over here. There is a practical case that could come up, and you could think of different permutations of this, I think. Practically speaking, you know, your non-Jewish babysitter asks you to heat up her cheeseburger on the stove or in the microwave. Can you? So again, she brought a cheeseburger to work. So most people have a rule, and it's a good rule. And I think that the housekeeper or the babysitter or whoever works in your home, if he's not Jewish, doesn't get to bring their own food into the home because it just causes confusion. They're going to trafe up your kalim, or their kids are going to chas shalom. You know, you could hear horror stories about that, where the kids chas shalom eat some of their food. So, you know, it's better policy not to let them bring any food, but they brought their cheeseburger to work and you didn't have such a rule. You didn't know from it. Or I had a question here on the poll, but you know what? Maybe we'll do a poll. One second. I think I have a poll here about this different case, similar. Here, let's do this. See the poll on the screen? Your coworker is in the lunchroom. I think there's lunchrooms in the office, and I still haven't gone to an office, and asks you to please heat his delicious-looking Philly cheesesteak. What is that even? I happen not to know. I assume it has cheese in it, but I do not know what a Philly cheesesteak is. I could have Googled it, and I did not Google it, but hopefully my filter would cut off Philly cheesesteak. But either way, he asks you to heat his Philly cheesesteak. Sounds like a cheese and a meat together. Can you put that in the microwave for him? So what do you think? Is that going to be an iser of bishul basar b'chalav? So obviously you're heating up. If Philly cheesesteak has cheese in it, which I'm pretty confident it does based on its title. So if it's a cheese and meat, so what are you doing over here? Of course, that's called bishul basar b'chalav. No, you're heating it up. On the other hand, is it different than regular bishul? Is it not derech bishul? Is it not daraisa? What are we talking about over here? And the last option over here is actually, it's half a joke, but pretty much serious, actually. is that the meat is treif. Does that affect the halacha at all? The truth is that does affect the halacha. It's not what we're talking about tonight, but that actually can affect the halacha. So we'll leave a little bit of more time. Not so many people have answered so quickly. Give it a shot over here. If your coworker asks you to heat up in the microwave his or her cheese and meat dish together, are you allowed to do so for them? Or is that considered an iser of bishul, basar, b'challah? We'll end the poll in 5 seconds. Five, starting now. Five, four, still coming in. I don't want to cut you guys off. Five, four, three, two, one. Oh, we got more participants than last time. Here we go. Ending the poll now. So I'll share the results. So this is good, a good mix over here. 44 of you said, of course not. That's not considered official. That makes sense, right? Because we just spent the last 10 minutes or so describing why the first group of the majority was wrong, maybe. Because a machlokas is always the right answer. You know that already. You already know that machlokas is always the right answer. But here, you could hear why it's not considered official because there's no water, right? There's no water and fire combination over here. This isn't a regular case of cooking. It's not like what we describe bashal mavushal by the Karban Pesach. It's not cooking in water. So that's not real cooking. The microwave case is very, very complicated. It is a machlokas between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein in terms of on Shabbos and Basar B'Chalav, whether that's considered real cooking or not. Others said, what do you mean? Of course, this is Bishal Basar B'Chalav. You're heating up Basar and Chalav together. In terms of being the meat being treif, so the meat being treif is an interesting point. Actually, meat that is treif cannot become an Isser Basar B'Chalav Midar Raisa. It can only be Midar Abanan, which is fascinating because your regular case of like a McDonald's cheeseburger will always be only an Isser Darabanan. Everyone draws it up as like the worst case ever, but it'll usually be a case of Darabanan because the meat is also a treif, but we're not in that sugya right now. So someone just asked in the group, I only see half your name. Sorry, the font is too big this time. I have to learn how to fix that. Someone asked in the group, is their name starts with an R, it looks like, is microwave heating ein bishul achar bishul? Excellent. So that takes us exactly the next thing we want to discuss right now. Brilliant. Ein bishul achar bishul. So any of us who have learned over the last year together, well, that's not fair. Any of us who learned a year ago together in the summer when we learned bishul, bishabbos, so we learned about the concept of reheating on Shabbos. Because again, not too many people cook things on Shabbos, right? Not too many people have a shayla. Am I allowed to turn on the stove and cook myself lunch for Shabbos afternoon? Not too many people ask that shayla. What people do ask is, am I allowed to heat up this food or am I not allowed to heat up this food? What we're dealing with in those shaylas is food which is already fully cooked, or let's say it was mostly cooked, but we're dealing with food that was cooked and we want to reheat it on Shabbos. Is that considered cooking? So we have a concept on Shabbos called Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, which means that once something was cooked halachically, then on Shabbos, when you want to reheat it, that's not considered halachic cooking. You won't be in violation of an Isser D'Oraisa of cooking on Shabbos because it was already cooked from before Shabbos. It could still be an Isser Derabanan. You have to do the right things in terms of setting up your stove and setting up your food. And you have to go back to our Shirim from then to really understand the details. But reheating Bishul Achar Bishul is not considered an Isser Derais of Bishul on Shabbos. That is clear. What about in Hilchos Kashrus? What about in Hilchos Basar B'Chalav? If you have meat and milk that was cooked together, is there an Isser of Bishul Achar Bishul? If you reheat it, if you recook it, if you now take it and put it back onto a flame, is that considered more Bishul Basar B'Chalav? So Rabbi Kiva Eger brings this point up right on our halacha, right in our sif in Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Kiva Eger writes, mashma, based on a Shari Dura that he's quoting, we won't get into the details now, but mashma, dim nizbashla b'chalav. If meat had already been cooked in chalav, it was already cooked in milk, mutter lachzor ulavashlo. Ein bishul, achar bishul. Once it's already been cooked, once the meat and milk have already been cooked together, the tastes have fused, they become an entity of basar b'chalav. Once that's already happened, mutter, lachs, or lavashla, you could reheat it. You could go ahead and put it back on a fire. What, are you crazy? You're cooking basar b'chalav. Answer is no, it's already been cooked. Ein bishul achar bishul. That's what Rabbi Kiva Eger says. So far, so good, yeah? Same as Shabbos, right? Ein bishul achar bishul. There's no isser, there's no prohibition, there's no violation in reheating meat and milk that were already cooked together. However, if you look a few halachos later in the Rama tells us a very interesting case. Let's say you are a Jewish worker working in a non-Jewish home. or are you a Jewish person who just happens to be staying over at a non-Jew's house? It happened more often back in the day. You're staying over at a non-Jewish house or a non-Jewish owned inn, and there's a pot on the flame, much like the one in the picture over here, a pot on the stove, and the fire is getting a little bit low. So you want to be a nice person. You want to stoke the coals for them and make the pot heat up a little bit better, make the flame a little bit hotter. Yesh Omrim, says the Ramah, the bottom source over here. Yesh Omrim, the Aser Lachtos Ha'esh. It's Aser to be mechate, to stoke the coals. Tachas Kedera Shel Ovdei Gulim, under the pot of a non-Jew. Why? Lefi, listen closely here, okay? This is going to be important. Lefi, Shehem Mevashlim Bohem Pe'amim Chalev U'Pe'amim Basar. Sometimes they use the pot for meat. Sometimes they use the pot for milk. They use it for whichever one they want. They don't have halachos of basar v'chalav. So what? Who cares what they do? Hamechate tachas kedera shalahem. If I stoke the coals and make the flame higher, what am I doing? Bali de bishal basar v'chalav. Why? Because this pot yesterday at 3 p.m., the non-Jew cooked some macaroni and cheese in this pot. Today at 8 a.m., less than 24 hours later, that same non-Jew cooked some meat in there. Now at 10 a.m., I want to raise the flame a little bit. Wait a minute. There's some meat in there. There's some milk product in there. I'm stoking the flames. What am I doing? I'm cooking basar v'chalav. Says the Ramah, don't do it. It's a chumrah, but don't do it. Now, what does that sound like, though? We said a second ago, ein bishal achar bishal, which means that if something was already cooked on Shabbos, or basar b'chalav, meat and milk were already cooked together. When something's already been cooked, am I allowed to reheat it? Am I allowed to recook it? The Rabbi Kiva Eger told us, yeah, it's fine. You're allowed to recook that. You're allowed to reheat that. Why? Because it's already been cooked. It's already been made to be basar b'chalav. You're not doing anything. You're not adding anything. Says the Ramah, even though this pot has cooked meat in it and cooked milk in it, when you now raise the flame, you're called cooking basar b'chalav. Sounds like the Ramah disagrees. Sounds like the Ramah thinks, so maybe it's because they weren't cooked together, but maybe they have been cooked together. The non-Jews don't care if it's meat and milk separate, right? So they could have cooked it together also. The meat and the milk in there have been cooked together separately. They've been cooked in all different ways. And now you're stoking the coals. So who cares? It's ein bishal achar bishal. Apparently it sounds like the Ramah thinks yesh bishal achar bishal. Maybe it's only a chumrah, but on some level he thinks there's an issue of reheating basar b'chalav that was already cooked together. So is reheating considered cooking? That's a major machlokas haposkim, it seems like. What it really boils down to, no pun intended, what it really boils down to, that time pun intended, is that there's a question over here of how similar this halacha should be to bishul b'shabbos. We are talking about bishul basar b'chalav and bishul b'shabbos, right? They're both cooking. They're both talking about bishul. So you could hear why there'd be similarities, there'd be parallels, there'd be comparisons between the two of them. But should basar b'chalav, the halachos of kashrus, exactly mimic hilchos Shabbos? Should the same way that on Shabbos, ein bishul achar bishul, there's no concept, there's no issur, there's no violation in reheating already cooked food on a d'oraisa level. There's no violation of reheating cooked food on Shabbos. So too, by bishul basar b'chalav, there's no violation in reheating cooked basar b'chalav. Or no, the two things have nothing to do with each other. Shabbos is one halacha, basar b'chalav is another halacha. Just because they both use the word bishul doesn't mean they overlap in any which way. That's really what the poskim are arguing about over here. And this is a major machlokas halacha lemaisa. So we've seen two big disputes so far. One, roasting and frying. Are those considered derech bishul? Are those the normal way of bishul? Big machlokas haposkim. Some people say, nope, only if you have real amounts of water and fire is that called bishul. If it's just a fire or if it's a little bit of oil that you're frying some food in, that's not considered derech bishul. It's aser midarabanan, not aser daraisa. Other people argue and say, what are you talking about? That's still aser daraisa. Those are normal ways of cooking. You can call it roasting, you can call it frying, but it's a normal way of cooking. A big machlokas on a big severe iser, so we're usually machmir. We'll try to be careful and assume that we'll treat frying, roasting, we'll treat those things as isurim de'oraisa, just in case. Salting and pickling, those types of cooking, the shachlarei told us are only aser midarabanan. Fine. In terms of ein bishul achar bishul, reheating food, is that considered cooking? That's also a major machlokas at poskim. So some of the posts can explain to us why it shouldn't be basar b'chalav if you cook it after it's already been cooked, but others are telling us that it is. The Ramah seems to be machmir. So again, we have to be careful about these halachos. So our case from before, the housekeeper in the house heating up a cheeseburger, the coworker with his Philly cheesesteak, in both those cases, even if it was already cooked, and even if you're doing it in an abnormal way, roasting or frying, you have to wonder if you should really be doing that. because it might be an Isser Daraisa, not just an Isser Darabanan, which potentially you would be allowed to do derive benefit from. In that case, you would not. So the last thing we want to talk about is very interesting, and it's familial. It's a case that was brought to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the Rav Soloveitchik that we're most familiar with, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik on the bottom. His father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's father was Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So it was a pretty good yichus. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University in YU, Rav Yitzchak Elkanan over here, before the Rav, before Rav Yosef Dov, his son, became the became a Rosh Yeshiva here. And he was asked the following interesting question. He was asked by a Jewish student who was working in a science class in a laboratory who needed to use a Bunsen burner, to cook up some materials in a science experiment. And the materials that he was cooking up, the ingredients that he was cooking up, included meat and milk ingredients. And he wanted to know, when I'm doing this experiment, when I'm cooking meat and milk, in order to learn about their properties, their traits, in order to have some chemical experience and understand the process that's going on over here, I'm gonna cook meat and milk together. Is that an isser of bishul basar b'chalav? When I perform a lab experiment that cooks meat and milk together, is that an isser of cooking basar b'chalav? So feel free to put in the chat if you have an opinion about this. I care very much about your opinion. But what do you think? Should that be an isser? Again, you are cooking meat and milk. Is there any way out? Is there any reason that you would assume that's not? So imagine, so no water. So I don't know how these experiments work, but I see a little bit of water in that cup. So let's assume there was water. Let's assume there was water. Let's assume this is derech bishul. There's a fire, water, and things like that. Excellent. So now I'm getting the answers that I was looking for. So a few people wrote it in different words, some people privately, some people publicly, very good, that there's a very, very interesting thing that's lacking over here. And we'll start with a Rambam. We'll spell it out this way. The Rambam tells us, Lo shasak ha-kasav miles or ha-achila. The Torah doesn't tell us that there's an isser to eat basar b'chalav, correct? What does the Torah tell us? You can't cook basar b'chalav. It doesn't say you can't eat basar b'chalav. It says you can't cook basar b'chalav. But we know it implies you can't eat it also. Says the Rambam, Lo shasak ha-kasav miles or ha-achila. The Torah didn't tell us that you can't eat basar b'chalav. It only told us you can't cook it. Mipnei she'asar ha-bishul, because it already told us it's asar to cook. Kilomar. When the Torah told you that don't cook meat and milk, it means afilu bishulo aser. The ein sarach lomar achilaso, says the Rambam, a fascinating thing. The Rambam says, why does the Torah not tell us that you can't eat basar b'chalav? It only tells us you can't cook because it didn't have to tell us. Once the Torah told us that you cannot cook basar b'chalav, you knew automatically, mimela, eo ipso, you knew right away that it was true that you can't eat basar b'chalav. Why do I know that? The Torah said you can't cook it. Why does that mean I can't eat it? What does one have to do with the other? So the Achronim explain as follows. What the Rambam means is that when the Torah says don't cook something, it means don't cook something, like some people put in the chat over here, don't cook something in order to eat it. Don't cook a food that you'll then consume. Now, cooking basar b'chalav is asr in and of itself, whether you eat it or not. It's not allowed to be done. You may not cook, you may not be mevashel meat and milk together, even if you don't actually end up eating it, but it has to be cooked in such a way that you're making something edible, that you're making something that's a food, that you're making something that's an ochel. Says the Rambam, that's why the Torah only had to say don't cook. Because once it said don't cook, you knew automatically don't cook in such a way that it could lead to eating. It doesn't need to tell you about eating. You can't cook something because you can't eat something. It's implied by the psukim. It's obvious. It's insinuated by the pasuk telling you don't cook. That obviously means you also can't eat it. Says the Rambam, the idea of cooking basar b'chalav shows you you also can't eat it. Said Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, may one perform a lab experiment which involves cooking meat and milk in that same experiment? Said Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, absolutely. Why? Because of what you guys just said in the chat. Because what you're cooking over here is not a food. You're cooking something that's going to be disposed of. It's going to be studied, but it's going to be thrown out. It's not at all in the form of something that's going to be an achila. Bishul, when the Torah says don't cook, it means don't cook in such a way that you're making a food. But this has no relevance at all to a food. And so a science experiment, said Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, would be totally permissible to do, even though you're cooking meat and milk together, but it's not done in such a way that it's going to lead to any food or any eating of any food from that process. And other poskim had the same answer as well. And it actually has another interesting practical ramifications, which we don't really do too much unless you're at a rally or something. But may one dispose of meat and milk in a trash can at once in the same trash can? Should you have separate meat and milk trash cans if you know it's going to be burnt together? Why would you burn your trash? Like I said, there's most cases you wouldn't burn your trash. But can you burn meat and milk together if they're just trash, just garbage? Here, I think it looks like from the picture you're burning cheese and beer. But okay, but in a case that I could have drawn up, I guess I could have Googled a better picture of a garbage can with meat and milk in it, but this will do for now. Are you allowed to do that? So says the halacha, many of the poskim say this, the Pesachei Tshuva is an interesting sefer, more modern contemporary sefer that quotes a lot of interesting halacha l'maisa questions. So he quotes poskim who are makel about this. Why are they makel about this? You're burning, you're lighting a fire with cheese and meat in the same trash can. Answer is, it's trash. It's disposable. It has nothing to do with eating. If you're not cooking in such a way that you're making food, it's not called cooking. It's called disposing of. That's called burning, right? That's called getting rid of. That's not called cooking, because cooking implies that you're making something edible. You're crafting something that's an edible food. Said the Rav, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, our Soloveitchik that we're familiar with, that's the definition of Bishul Basar B'Chalav. That's what we were trying to get through this whole night. Bishul Basar B'Chalav, and you can read this along with me, is defined as creating a new entity which is now forbidden to be eaten as basar b'chalav, meaning creating an edible combination of meat and dairy through cooking. That's an iser d'oraisa of bishul. Bishul basar b'chalav means to create a food that's edible, a basar b'chalav food that's edible. Says the Rav, if the food was already cooked, if you already had a Philly cheese steak that was beautifully cooked, the meat and the milk together, everything was already formed perfectly, you have an edible basar b'chalav in front of you. Now you want to take that and put it on a fire again, put it in a microwave. You want to reheat it. Is that bishul basar b'chalav? On the one hand, you're heating up basar b'chalav. But on the other hand, says the Rav, the food was already cooked. It was already edible. Bishul basar b'chalav only exists when you create an edible entity, when you create a combination of basar b'chalav. Here, it's not that it's not derech bishul. Who cares about derech bishul? Even if it was derech bishul, even if you put it on a fire, even if you put it in a pot with water, even so, says the Rav, but since it was already cooked, you had already created such an entity, now you're not creating anything. If you're not creating a new food, if you're not making something that's asar b'achila because it already existed, that's ein bishul achar bishul, right? There's no second bishul. It already existed. This was already created. It was already an entity of basar b'chalav that was edible. You haven't added to that process. If you haven't added to the process, you're not in violation of the iser of bishul basar b'chalav, says the Rav, says Rav Soloveitchik, based on the same idea that his father was saying, that the whole concept of bishul basar b'chalav is that you can't create something edible of meat and milk. That is the definition of cooking by basar b'chalav. That's the definition of bishul basar b'chalav, and that plays into so much of what we're going to discuss, Mir Tashem, over the next few weeks. But before we go, and before we close it up, one very, very interesting food for thought, one very, very interesting case that you might want to consider. And I guess you could definitely email me with some of your answers. We don't have time to go through all of the sides over here, but I'll mention some of them. But you could very easily have a case of a person who wants to become a professional chef or just wants to perfect their skills as a cook, as a chef, and they decide to go to a culinary school or take classes, and it's not a kosher program. It's not the Jewish program. So they go to a culinary school and meat and milk are being cooked together. Can they participate in the program? So it's obvious they can't cook the meat and milk together. That's for sure. But are they allowed to fry the meat and milk together, roast the meat and milk together? Think about everything you spoke about the whole night. Are they allowed to do those things? So we would assume not, right? We would assume those are possibly Yisurim D'Oraisa, definitely Yisurim D'Rabbanan, but possibly even Yisurim D'Oraisa. You're not going to be able to fry, roast, cook, none of that. But what about the following? Can I watch the teacher cook? By the way, feel free to send answers into the chat. If you're watching the chef, watching the cook roast, fry, cook the foods in order to learn how to do so yourself, is that permissible? Now, what are the issues we're talking about over here? You're not cooking. You're not eating. What are you doing, maybe? If you're watching a chef, maybe that's hana, exactly. And that's what we had a question earlier. What's the definition of hana? What's the definition of deriving benefit? Maybe that's a case of deriving benefit. Isn't that fascinating? Maybe it's a case in which if you're watching them, you're trying to learn and you're trying to visualize and trying to understand how the process of cooking works, and you're watching how they fry basar b'chalav, how they cook basar b'chalav. So maybe that's an issue of deriving benefit. And then you have to start to think for a second. Deriving benefit is usher only when there's a basar b'chalav. on a biblical level, on a deraisa level. So if they're cooking meat and milk, maybe that's an issue. But what if they're just frying the meat and milk? Maybe I'm allowed to derive benefit in that case. I'm allowed to watch and learn from them. And then let's go even further. Maybe watching and learning and viewing something is not even called deriving benefit. Maybe deriving benefit is only something tangible. You make money off of it. You smell something. You use it for a perfume. Whatever. You use something in a tangible way. You just watch. You just view it. Is that considered deriving benefit? These are all questions you'd have to throw into the mix to try to figure out if this is something that's permissible to do, watching and learning from the chef who's cooking or frying or roasting these basar b'chala foods in order to learn the trades. That's food for thought. That's something to think about. It's something we may or may not come back to in the future and may be practical for some people. It's worth reaching out and asking about that to a posek if it is. But it's a very, very fascinating question that combines so much of what we spoke about tonight. Because again, we spoke about the building blocks, the introductory steps, the basics of basar b'chala, just defining what basar b'chala is, what bishul is, what cooking is. But so much of it boils down to over here, a halacha l'maaseh case where you can play in all those factors. What's cooking, what's not cooking, what's hana, what's not hana, what's asr daraisa, what's not asr daraisa, and the halacha comes out so beautifully and plays out so impressively and so intricately in a funny, interesting, strange case like the one we depicted over here. Next week, b'siyat d'shmaya b'li neder, I want to talk about the topic of gaining weight, but not the type that it sounds like, you have to read the word, 1, 3, or 6 hours between meat and dairy. So we want to talk about the concept, the halacha, the minhag, whatever you want to call it, of waiting between eating meat and milk. And in doing so, we want to try to uncover what the sources for waiting, how long to wait in between each of them, and where the sources are for all the different minhagim that you're probably familiar with. Spoiler alert, I'm not going to give you a one hour kula, unless anyone here has a van as their name, their last name, van something, then I'll give you a kula for 1 hour. But most of us don't do 1 hour, so that's a little bit of a spoiler. But we'll learn about the depth of the halacha over there. B'siyat d'shmaya b'li neder. Until then, everyone feel free to register if you haven't registered yet at the website. Feel free to reach out about sponsoring a shiur or anything else. Feel free to reach out about anything at all, halacha, technical, feedback, anything like that. And b'siyat d'shmaya b'li neder, I hope to see you here next week. And bring a friend, have more people register. We'd love to have more people learning together. That's great. I will see you, hopefully, next week, Monday night, 8:30 p.m. Everyone have a wonderful night and a wonderful rest of the week.